Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
And I'm Tyler Clausen.
Imagine you're an expectant parent. The big day finally comes, but the unimaginable happens. Your baby never makes it home from the hospital. Stillbirths are experienced by thousands of mothers every year, and for many families, the pain never truly goes away.
When tragedy like this strikes, more and more midwives, bereavement counselors, and psychologists are recommending the use of refrigerated bassinets like the cuddle cot, which allows the families the time and space to grieve their loss. In this episode, we meet Marissa Yeager, a local woman whose goal is to place cuddle cots at every hospital in Oregon. But first, the news. The Canby High School turf field has been condemned for the upcoming spring season after the Canby School District's insurer inspected the field this week and determined it is not usable for athletic competition. It was bad news for sports and clubs that had planned to use the field this spring and who are now seeking alternate locations for their activities. The field is literally coming apart at the seams. The way Canby's field was constructed, the portions that are a different color, such as the white lines and numbers and the iconic Cougars logo in the center, are actually different pieces of turf that are all sewn together. That's a lot of seams, and some of them have not held up to the wear and tear over the years. The fear is that the seams could trip or snag or otherwise injure a player as they run down the field. The field is a source of great community pride, having been built in 2010 through a local grassroots, pun intended, effort that raised more than $950,000 needed to realize the dream of a then cutting-edge artificial field for Canby Athletics. The fundraising was so successful that the initial project was financed without a dime of district money. The district is currently working with Canby Lacrosse, Track and Field, and other activities to help support their search for alternate locations. The first preseason games for most spring sports are in just a couple weeks. A representative said that the district is beginning the planning process of how to best move forward with replacing the field. The expense of replacing it is expected to be much less than the $950,000 it originally cost to install, due to the drainage and other needed substructures already being in place. However, she said she could not speak to potential costs until the board had given direction on the matter. As of December 2018, the district had just shy of $300,000 saved in its turf replacement fund.
A fatal crash occurred on Highway 211 outside of Molalla on Friday, the second on that stretch of road in less than 2 weeks. The crash involved two vehicles and occurred around 4:30 p.m., March 1st, just east of Molalla. According to Oregon State Police, 75-year-old Maurice Dietz of Colton was driving a 2012 Subaru Legacy northbound on Highway 211 when, for unknown reasons, he crossed over the center line and into the southbound lane, striking headlong into a 1998 Dodge 2500, operated by a 48-year-old Woodburn resident Beverly Parker. A passenger of the Subaru, identified as 49-year-old Matthew Dietz of Colton, sustained fatal injuries and was pronounced dead on the scene. Maurice Dietz was airlifted to a trauma hospital in Portland for critical injuries. Parker sustained minor injuries and declined transport to a hospital. Highway 211 was closed for approximately 5.5 hours while OSP worked the scene, assisted by the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office, Molalla Police Department, Molalla Fire Department, AMR, Life Flight, and ODOT. Another fatal crash had occurred on Highway 211 just 3 days earlier and a few miles down the road. Jacob Slinkard, 28, also of Colton, was killed on February 26 when his pickup truck left the roadway and struck a tree.
Canby City Administrator Rick Robinson is retiring. Again. Robinson actually came out of retirement in 2014 to take the job in Canby. He retired in 2011 after a more than 20-year career in executive government in Chico County in Northern California and Stanislaus County in Central Cali. Robinson made his presence felt early on in his new job. He was widely credited with helping finally bring the modern new public library and civic building to fruition, for which he was named the Canby Herald's Person of the Year in 2016. Also known for his wide breadth of knowledge and experience. Not content to just stick to the standard city administrator role, he has also in the past stepped into the shoes of Public Works Director, a hat he is currently wearing following Jennifer Klein's departure from the city late last year for a new job with ODOT. If you're not sure what a city administrator does, well, don't feel bad. But think about it as sort of the CEO for the city. The mayor and city council are Cambie's top elected officials, of course, and they set policy and overall direction for the city. But they are basically volunteers, knowledgeable, hard-working volunteers, who generally come together just twice a month for public hearings and to decide ordinances, resolutions, and other matters. The city administrator is a full-time employee whose job is to carry out the decisions and policy direction of the mayor and city council. He or she also oversees most of the other staff who work for the city. While Robinson has announced his intentions to remain with the city through the end of October, the job is so important that plans for his replacement are already well underway. The city council recently approved a contract with Peckham and McKinney, an executive search firm in California, to conduct the recruitment process. Their $26,000 fee includes expenses for three on-site meetings, the first of which will be this Wednesday, to establish what the council is looking for in its new city administrator and begin to develop a candidate profile.
Cambie Alliance Church will host international speaker and award-winning author Sarah Thieber for two events this weekend. Sarah was a physician's assistant living in Portland when she had a chance encounter with a refugee family from Somalia. This family became an integral part of Sarah's life as she also grew to be important to them. Language barriers didn't stand in the way of their pizza dinners, fashion shows, and friendships. Sarah, who had recently moved from the East Coast and was recovering from her battle with breast cancer, experienced healing and renewed faith through the relationship with her new Somali friends. She chronicled her experiences in a popular blog that eventually became an award-winning memoir, Invisible Girls. Her second book, Well, was also recently released. It focuses on her time practicing medicine in Togo in 2017. Sarah recently returned from South Sudan, where she spent 3 months volunteering as a physician's assistant. Catch Sarah at 1 p.m. Saturday as part of the annual Ladies' Tea held at CAC, or join the church for Sunday worship at 9:30 a.m. Sarah will be speaking during the service and will hold a Q&A session afterward.
Hey, I'm Steve, owner of the FOB Tap Room in Cambie.
And I'm Jen, the head bartender.
FOB stands for Friends of Beer, and that's what we are. It's even on my business card.
He's not kidding. It really is.
What?
Oh, nothing. Beer is practically an art form in the Pacific Northwest, and the FOB is the best place to enjoy all of your old favorites and even find some new ones. We have a constantly rotating selection of 36 of the best craft beers, ciders, and wines from right here in Oregon and around the world.
We also host an awesome trivia night on Wednesdays with tap takeovers and new release parties every month. There's always something going on here, so please come on by. We'd love to see you.
Find us in Cambie Place on Southwest Berg Parkway and on Facebook and Instagram.
See you at the FOB.
A song by Edgar Guest. None knows the day that friends must part. None knows how near is sorrow. If there be laughter in your heart, don't hold it for tomorrow. Smile all the smiles you can today. Grief waits for all along the way. Today is ours for joy and mirth. We may be sad tomorrow. Then let us sing for all we've worth, nor give a thought to sorrow. None knows what lies along the way. Let's smile what smiles we can today. So my guest today is Marissa Yeager. She's the organizer of the Cuddle Cot fundraiser, which is coming up next month. Marissa, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Of course.
Obviously, this is the second year that you've done the fundraiser, so some folks who might have been part of it last year might know kind of what the Cuddle Cots are, but I feel like maybe a lot of our listeners may not know. Can you tell us a little bit about what they are and what the purpose of this of having them is, why you want to bring them to hospitals?
Oh, for sure. So a cuddle cot is used when a mom has a stillborn baby. And what happens is, if you think back, if you're a parent, you think back to preparing for your child, the announcement of the pregnancy, you start preparing a nursery, you research every car seat, you washed and folded the tiny little clothes and probably chose an outfit that your new baby would come home in.
Yeah, all that prep does go into it for sure.
Yeah. And you just get more excited as you go along with the pregnancy, 7 months rolls around, then 8 months, and then 9 months, and you're getting towards the end, but anything can happen. Whether you stop feeling your baby move or all of a sudden something doesn't feel right. And statistics say it's one out of every four pregnancies that are affected with a stillbirth.
Oh my gosh, I had no idea it was that high.
Yes. So
wow.
One out of four moms go to the hospital expecting to bring home their baby only to find out that their baby has deceased.
Oh my gosh.
And with a cuddle cot, what happens is when a mom has a stillborn baby, the hospital has to transport the baby back and forth to the morgue to keep the baby cool. Because if it's not kept cool, the decomposition sets in and it basically is so fragile that it's very disruptive to the family. So as a cuddle cot, it is a single unit refrigerated bassinet that the moms can use in their hospital room with their baby, where the nurses can say, take your time, have your time with your baby. Then a lot of hospitals help out with different angel gowns or memorials of their hands or feet, depending on how the baby is. But this gives the moms a chance to see their baby, spend time with their baby, and really start that grief process naturally.
Mm-hmm. Wow, so I knew obviously what this was about, but I'm finding myself like really emotional right now,
yes.
Even just talking about it. So I'm not looking at you. But can you tell us a little bit more about that process? So now we kind of know what it is, but do you have any research or testimonies from people of what this having this extra time to kind of grieve and have closure from a stillborn birth has on these parents?
We had a family, specifically part of our Grange, that dealt with...
And we're here at the Warner Grange,
by the way.
Yeah, which is where the fundraiser is going to be. We'll get to all those details.
Yes.
But go ahead, tell me about this family.
A family part of the Warner Grange. They did not know about the cuddle cot with their first stillborn baby. And unfortunately, their time was very brief. The entire situation was dealt with slightly haphazardly. And they didn't know what the resources were. But their second child, they found out that, hey, by law, you're allowed to have that baby for at least 24 hours, I believe, and be able to spend that time. And it was just that much more time where they can invite family members to come in and see the baby and really understand and process what's happening. As a mom, when you're pregnant, you're not only dealing with the baby come in and all of the fun stuff that goes with that, but after the baby comes, you have postpartum care and your hormones are raging and everything's happening all at once. And this is something that disrupts that entire cycle.
Yeah.
I also talked to another family that had an issue with the insurance because when a baby's stillborn, it's not issued either a birth certificate or a death certificate. So it basically has never existed. Mm-hmm. And when you go to bill your insurance, it's billing for what? The child wasn't there, so they ended up with loads of medical bills that they couldn't write off, and there was complications to do with that.
Yeah.
So this isn't going to change that, but hopefully it'll make the transition a little bit easier.
Yeah, and I think that it's a little bit counterintuitive or countercultural. Like I think that people imagine it's such a painful thing to have a stillborn baby that like Like many things, I think the natural inclination is to hide it, get rid of it as quickly as possible. And I guess the research and the actual real life experiences of these moms are finding, of the moms and the dads are finding that, no, it is so much better to have that time.
Yes, and it's also better to talk about it. Nobody talks about their miscarriages or their stillborns. In our,
there's so much pain associated with
it. So much pain, and then it's just covered.
But you just, that pain doesn't go away from not talking about it, unfortunately.
No, and so there's a lot of support groups out there for moms of loss. I've had some families that refer to it as their angel babies and their earthside babies. But yes, it's definitely becoming, because we're doing this fundraiser, in many cases, people are coming up to us and being like, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for bringing light to such a dark topic, because it's something that is hidden.
Yeah, yeah. How did you get involved with this fundraiser, Marissa? This is the second year that you've done it here in Canby?
Yes, so the first year was October 2017. So it seems a little odd that we're doing it a year
2 years later.
Or
a year and a half.
But I wanted to do it in the spring, because spring is when people think about, oh, auctions and fundraisers. It's a good tax season. You just got your return. You know, come support a nonprofit.
Yeah, hopefully you got your return, right?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So we did the first one in October because we wanted to do it as soon as possible when we heard about the project in May of 2017.
Okay.
So the idea came to us in May. We wrapped everything together and put it on in October. With that fundraiser, we were able to raise $23,000 and be able to place 7 cuddle cots in local hospitals. Mm.
These are pretty expensive, it seems like.
Yes. So they're $3,000 a piece if a nonprofit purchases them. Mm-hmm. But if a business entity such as a hospital purchases them, they're about $10,000 a piece.
Oh, gosh.
So it's not only the extra effort to make sure that the hospital, you know, sees it as a necessary piece of medical equipment, but then they have to go through the grant process and also raising the money or whatever their funds are allowed, and then go through the process where it's easier for us as a nonprofit to say, hey, we'll do the work.
It's crazy.
We'll place them in your hospital and please use them.
30% of the cost. That's insane.
So we were able to do 7 hospitals, and then this time in April, I just needed that full extra year to be like, okay, let's regroup, let's see what other businesses are willing to support us, and see how much more we can spread this project.
Yeah, so your goal this year is what?
$40,000.
So that would be, that's amazing. So that would be 14 more hospitals?
Hopefully, yes.
Yeah, and you have those already picked out of where you'd want them to go? Or are they all around the area?
No. Well, so we hit Legacy Good Samaritan, Providence St. Vincent's, Legacy Meridian Park, Legacy Emmanuel, OHSU Dornbecker's, Legacy Mount Hood, and St. Charles Hospital in Bend.
Okay.
So those are the first 7.
Most of those are in Portland.
Most of them are in Portland. Yeah. So we do have one family that wants to donate a cuddle cot. They've already sent us a check, and we're ordering it.
Yeah.
So we'll have one for display at the auction so people can see it and really understand what's going on. But they also want that cuddle cot to go to Tillamook.
Okay.
And so if someone says, hey, I will write you the check for $3,000. I want it to go in this hospital. I'm happy to purchase it and place it in that hospital for them.
Yeah.
We also, and if they did that, it's a completely tax deductible contribution.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, we're just trying to make sure that every hospital in the state of Oregon has one. There's a couple that we didn't supply, but we do know that they're there. Like Corvallis has a cuddle cot in their hospital. Salem and Silverton both do, and both Kaisers in Westside and Eastside do.
Yeah.
So the project is growing not just because of us, but because so many other moms are affected. And there are some moms that I'm coordinating with, such as I have a friend in Corvallis. Her name's Holly, and she did a cuddle cot fundraiser for the Corvallis Hospital. And so she has one there. But now she came and is helping us with our efforts to continue the widespread.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's really cool. And I think I didn't even realize the full extent that these cuddle cots provide, because I kind of knew what it was about and providing that extra time. The tagline is give the gift of time.
Yes. Yeah.
But I didn't realize that it, essentially from how you described, like I figured if a parent wanted that time, they could still have that either way, and the cuddle cot maybe just made it easier. But it sounds like it's really, you don't get that time without that, because this is very specifically designed with that refrigeration to be able to prolong the ability of the family to
to have the baby. Otherwise, it would have to be taken to the morgue.
Most parents don't really know what their rights are when it comes to like hospital protocol, especially when something so tragic happens and out of the
blue.
You're not thinking
laws and regulations.
I'm sure the first time that that baby goes, because if without the cuddle cot, it has to go back and forth to the morgue. So you need a nurse to then transport it and then bring it back. I'm sure that every time that that baby gets ripped away from its family,
like
it makes
them.
It harder each time. So with the cuddle cot, it says, here's to the time that you need.
Yeah.
That way it's not this tragic, okay, we have to go, we can come back.
Right.
But they don't want to continue going through that back and forth.
Right.
So this really, yes, gives them the gift of time with their child.
Yeah. And the nurses and the staff can just hands off, like, we're not going to bother you, like, take all the time you need to process.
Yeah, and in the previous hospitals that we've spoken to, it's such a load off the nurses to say, I am so sorry for your loss, but take the time you need, because they want to be able to give that family privacy. They want to give that family the chance to grieve. And a lot of them, they do pictures if they have a camera available. Some hospitals may not have a camera, but they have volunteers that will come in and do pictures.
Sure.
And they have volunteers that knit angel gowns. There was even a lady over at Clark's Grange that donated a bunch of angel gowns to go to hospitals for the babies. And
what are those? Those are clothes to put on the store.
Yeah, it's beautiful dress that usually made out of wedding dresses. And so they'll dress the baby up and then take the photos, or the family has something to take home and bury their child in, or whatever works for them. But yes, they have something to remember the baby. Like I said, they don't have a birth certificate or a death certificate, so some hospitals will do like an angel certificate, but aside from these few mementos, they have nothing to say that you had a baby.
Right. What else do you hear from hospitals? I imagine they're very appreciative of your efforts and the ones that you've been able to help so far.
Yes. Well, and the frequency is high. I believe when I spoke to Emmanuel...
The frequency of use, you mean?
Yes. When we were up at Legacy Emmanuel, which is one of the more trauma centers or high-risk centers, they have 63 stillbirths a year.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's more than one a week.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the cuddle cot is getting lots of use there. We had a hospital out in St. Charles in Bend. I spoke with a family that is friends of a family, so it's kind of a third, but they knew the baby wasn't going to survive. It was born with a congenital heart defect and spinal bifida, but they were still able to not only spend the 4 days with the baby on earth, but then they were able to use a cuddle cot to spend more time to just say goodbye.
Wow. So how can people support this wonderful cause?
Oh, yes. So we, like I said, the auction is April 13th. 5 p.m., yes.
Here at the very echoey Warner Grange, if you guys are picking up on that sound, it's because we're in this huge empty grange. But
yes, it'll be all decked out. It's all empty now. But
there'll be more people in here, hopefully.
We have slots for about 195 people to participate.
Okay.
So what we're going to do is we're going to do a silent auction, and we're going to do a full dinner, and then we're going to do a live auction as well. So it'll be a whole evening of program. I have a gentleman named Paul Carlson. He runs 4-H Financial.
I've heard of that guy.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah. He's going to be joining me as my MC, so he's going to be helping us out. And, he brings so much light to such a dark event, in the realm of the topic.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a lot of fun. If you would like to make a monetary donation, the Warner Grange is accepting monetary donations. And if you'd like to purchase tickets, they can either contact me or go to Eventbrite. We're using Eventbrite as our ticket sales, and they can just search Warner Grange Cuddle Cot Fundraiser and find us.
We'll put that link out in the show notes for this episode as well. Is there a phone number that people should take down, or if they want to call you or call the Grange to get more info?
It's all my phone number.
Okay.
So if anybody have any questions, they can just call me. My phone number is 503-347-9476. So they can either call me to make a donation. If someone wants to donate like an item or a service, I'd be happy to come pick it up. It's enough that you're doing something for us. I don't want to make you have to ship it or be concerned with that as well. Yeah. So.
Cool. Okay, well, we're almost out of time. Do you have any final thoughts or anything to add?
No, I think that I just want to let people know we are about 50 donations into this fundraiser.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So, but I really, the community has, there's been an outpouring in this community, and Canby especially. Especially with the last fundraiser, we raised over $23,000. You know, we're progressing through this, and the community has done a lot to support us. So, thank you for that.
Yeah.
And thank you for doing this interview.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's so Canby, right?
Like, yes. When there's a need, they fill it.
Yeah. And I think that I just want to thank you and your team and the Grange here for this work, because it is something that I did get a little emotional, even though I should have been expecting, like, this interview. It's something that is not fun to talk about. No. Like, we wish it didn't happen, but so much better to confront it and do whatever you can to help, like you guys are, and like this community is, rather than just pretending like it's not happening, you know?
More than 1.2 million Americans receive internet, TV, and telephone services from community cooperatives like Direct Link. They believe that their role revolves around partnerships, whether sponsoring a local event, hosting educational classes, or investing in fiber internet technology. Direct Link is here for our community because they are a part of our community.
Beyond just working in Canby, most of Direct Link's employees live here as well. Direct Link's investment in the local area reaches past business interests and extends into the everyday lives of neighbors, friends, and families. Visit them online at directlink.coop to learn more about their communication services and community activities.
Located just off the corner of 13th and South Ivy is one of the most magical places on earth, Puddin' River Chocolates. That's where Chief Chocolatier Teresa Sassy and her team of employees hand make some of the richest, most delicious gourmet chocolates you can find anywhere. Yeah, that's right. Willy Wonka wishes he was this good. Teresa uses the highest quality free trade cocoa from around the globe and locally sourced hazelnuts, berries, and other ingredients to create world-class confections that are a treat to the eyes and the taste buds. And they do more than chocolate. The classic fondue is an ideal blend of Swiss cheese, wine, and spices that you have got to try. Puddin' River's creations make a great gift for a loved one, or hey, for yourself, because you know what? You deserve it. I deserve it, Frankie! Find them at PuddinRiverChocolates.com.
Hey, Tyler.
Hey, Frankie.
How's it going, man?
Pretty good. I still can't hear you in my microphone.
Oh, should I talk louder?
No, definitely do not do that.
Okay. Did I just hurt some people's ears?
I'm sorry. You just destroyed my audio equipment.
Okay.
End of podcast because of that.
I owe you some audio equipment. Hey, listeners, welcome to the Canby Now Soapbox. This is the portion of our show where we're just a little more free-flowing. We don't have a script for this. We are more of your traditional podcast. Just we got a couple microphones and a few things to talk about, but you'll hear us talk about local things and be a little more laid back and maybe a little more fun.
So. Yeah. You'll hear Frankie be more laid back, and you'll hear me be all like...
Just the way you always are.
Yeah. Yeah.
So last night, we're recording this on Sunday, so last night we went to the Chamber of Commerce Gala down at the Willamette Valley Country Club.
Yeah.
That was pretty
fun. It was fun.
Yeah, you enjoyed that?
And I won a thing. I did the silent
auction.
What did
you win? I never...
It was from the Book Nook. And so it had...
It looked like it had alcohol.
No, it had a glass, like a tumbler, like an alcohol.
You can drink
glass.
Alcohol out of that. Yeah.
You can drink alcohol out of most glasses, but this one specifically, I think, is
maybe all glasses. So before we get to our next segment, I will say that the Chamber Gala had the best popcorn of any Chamber Gala that I've ever been to. This was my first. So.
This is your first. This is my first. So
good popcorn.
100%.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah. I think my favorite part
of the night was definitely once, like, I'm standing, the whole thing is over, and then
people
I'm surrounded
to empty out
and I'm standing there with you and our wives, and then, you know, the waffles come over, so I've got, you know, Sarah Spoon, a counselor, and then out of nowhere Sean Varwig, another counselor comes over, and then, like, you guys all just start talking about, Sean brings up the the train quiet zone thing, and I physically took a step back.
Yeah.
Like, and just let you guys, not our wives, just you four, Sarah, Chris, Sean, and you, like,
all the nerds,
just
all the
going at it, like, all of your opinions, and I'm like, mm-hmm, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I produce a podcast.
Yeah. So we've been doing this podcast for about 6 months now.
Yeah.
And I rely on my community journalism experience a lot. And I tend to, through that, like, tend to have pretty good expectations of how things are going to land, sure, how people are going to take it.
Sure.
But Canby keeps surprising me. And I've never worked in Canby for local news before this podcast, but I've lived here the whole time that I've been out in Oregon.
Right.
But yeah, we've been posting stories about this quiet zone thing. We've been posting them like we do on our social media and yeah, into the local groups, like What's Happening Canby and Canby Now. And people are, I would say, like 98% like against this quiet zone.
Quiet zone.
Yeah. So this is something that's being done through the urban renewal process, which is, it's a little confusing.
I like that every time I've heard this conversation come up, this is like the apex of that conversation. Like,
urban,
this is
renewal,
the crutch of, like, yeah, everyone's like, put more money in the streets. It's like, that's not where the money goes. That's not where this is coming from.
It's confusing. Yeah. It's a very confusing small town government thing. So the city council also has a role called the Urban Renewal Agency. They
right,
are the head of the URA, which is also stands for Urban Renewal Area, which is a specific district within the city of Canby that includes downtown Canby, includes the industrial park, and a few other areas. They're all connected.
Right.
They can't be disconnected, you know.
Okay.
So they're, like, connected through 99E. And they have they're funded through it's very confusing. I'm not going to get into it. I'm just not going to. I've explained it on Facebook. It's a form of what's called tax increment financing, or TIF.
Cool.
But basically, they're property taxes that are generated.
I'm doing the listeners a favor,
right,
by giving Frankie the glazed over stare.
To,
like,
not get into this.
Yeah.
Essentially, all you need to know is that they're property taxes, but they're only generated within this district.
Right.
District, okay? So it's not the whole city. It's pretty much not a lot of residents'
yeah,
taxes that are going into this. It's only the taxes, and not all of the taxes. It's only the taxes on a certain increment within this area that go into a fund that then the city council and their role as URA get to disperse.
Sure.
And they decided...
Here's the quick and dirty of it.
Yeah.
There's money set aside, and this group of people get to decide what to do with it.
Right, exactly. The city council and their role as a URA, and they want to do projects that will best, be the best deliverable bang on their buck.
Sure.
For the stakeholders in the URA, which is mostly downtown businesses and industrial park users.
Definitely.
So one of the projects that they've been working on for a long time is this quiet zone that would basically allow, right now the trains as they go through any railroad crossing, of which there are three in downtown Canby, they are required by federal law to blow their horns 4 times as they approach each crossing, which means basically if you're in downtown Canby, you cannot talk as the train is going by.
Yeah.
Because the horns are so loud.
Right.
And what the quiet zones would be able to do, it's a really weird name. It's not a very accurate name because trains are still loud, you know.
Yeah.
But they don't have to blow their horns unless there is some safety concern. And
right,
it comes with other safety upgrades to the intersection. So they have what are called 4-quadrant gates that come down, which basically just means it's on all sides. It's not just
so you
the,
can't get around it.
Exactly. It's not just the oncoming traffic. So normally it would just be right in front of you. But if you wanted to, you could go around. That's how it is now.
Right.
They would come down on both sides, so you couldn't get through the gates. There would also be potentially concrete medians, so you wouldn't be able to cross over from there. There might be gates that would prevent pedestrians
Hold on.
Basically, they come with additional upgrades, which makes the need for the trains to blow their horns, there's no longer that need.
I feel like you're describing a lot of information that you've had to put out there already. What you just said, I read in a story last episode.
Yeah.
Literally, almost verbatim, what you just said, I read as a story.
Yeah.
So I feel like the reason why you're doing that is because there are so many people who have so many problems with this. What are the big three problems?
Okay.
What are their problems with it?
Yeah. So I don't know that people are reading the stories.
Sure.
People seem to think that they could maybe like never blow their horns, the engineers, that they would be like prohibited from doing that in some way. So like if somebody were on the tracks, they wouldn't be able to blow their horns. So people are very concerned about the safety aspect. People are also really concerned about the amount of money. Again, I'm not sure people understand how these funds are generated or what they are dedicated toward. So there are a lot of people like, why don't we spend this on the new turf field that's needed, you know, which is a completely different government entity.
The government doesn't get a big ball of money and then go, okay, how are we going to divide
this? There's not just one government, right?
And
there are a million different entities.
The city has specific fundings that go to specific things. It's the same thing that we saw with the water park, where it's like the water park is being built by money that is put aside specifically for building new, you know, attractions in that stuff. I know I'm probably summarizing it wrong, and the counselors
are like, got it right. And there's so many people that are like, why don't we spend this splash pad money on streets?
Yeah,
you can't.
We get several million dollars every year. Let's put all of it towards the streets this year. It's like, okay, then you don't have money for
police.
Electricity and police. Yeah. Like, there are specific restrictions in that require the council to move the money the way that they do.
Yeah.
And the what they're doing is not something out of the blue. It's something that people have wanted for a long time. Like I've lived next to the fire track.
The trains.
The train tracks. I've lived by them several different times.
Yeah.
And like when I heard that they're gonna try and implement a quiet zone, I was like, thank God. It's about time. Like how did we wait 100 years before we decided that this is a good idea?
Yeah. So the safety thing, like I'm not gonna sit here and say like people shouldn't be concerned about safety,
right?
You know, that is a valid concern, but the thing is, and the thing that I'm not sure people understand, and I just encourage you, like, research
go
this.
Look it up.
Don't just listen to me. Like, look it up, read the stories that we put out, but also other stories around. The point of this is to try to make the safety, try to improve the safety.
Yeah.
Okay. Like the horn law was put in because railroads didn't want to spend all this money to improve the crossings.
Right.
So just requiring trains to blow their horns was an easy,
that's the
cheap,
minimum.
It was
minimum
a cheap
amount.
Way
yeah.
to try and make things safer without actually spending the money to do the things that these safety zones actually do, or these quiet zones actually do, but the cities have to pay for.
Sure.
So that's how they offset those costs, by having the cities get so fed up with the horns that they decide, okay, we'll pay for the safety improvements if you don't have to blow your horns every time you come through our city. So the safety thing, basically, that's what the study is about, is they're coming to make sure this would actually make things safer.
Right.
If it doesn't, they're not going to do it.
Right.
Or they're not going to give their approval for it. The railroad wouldn't. So that's what this is about.
Was that all 3 points?
I got the third point.
Okay.
So the cost thing we talked about, these are funds that are dedicated just within the URA, and the Urban Renewal Agency is representing those stakeholders. And this is what the downtown business owners want. Like, I'm sorry if residents outside the URA don't, but frankly, you don't have a stake within this decision. This is the URA. And then the third thing that people say, which maybe ends up being the most valid, is that they just like the sound of the trains. It's like that nostalgic thing. Like they, and then to that, I just say, well, if you don't live downtown or go downtown a lot, maybe you don't experience, like, maybe you live like a few miles away and it's just sort of like a much quieter nostalgic thing. But if you are downtown in Canby, and we're downtown a lot,
yeah.
It's you can't talk if a train is going by. If you're on First Street or even Second Street, you have to pause the conversation. It is so loud.
I think that touches on a kind of a larger issue that Cambie has been going through for quite a while now, almost 20 years. I feel like, at least in my mind, because the last 20 years have been critical thinking years for me.
Right.
Is that there are different groups of people in Cambie. And, you know, you have people who are running businesses in town. You have people who are just living. They commute in and out all day. You have farmers who are just on the outside of town. And then you have, you know, young people who are just growing up. They don't get a say whether they're here or not.
Right.
You have a large diversity in Cambie. Yeah, and I think that's great. But then you run into the problem of, like, people don't stop to consider what it's like for other people in that community, you know, with when the farmers are like, well, you know, we like the train. It's old school. It's, you know, our grandfathers helped build it. I don't know. That's a ridiculous thing to say. But at the same time, like, they say that. But, like, your point is, they're not the ones who have to deal with it. Like, the businesses around Cambie have to deal with the fact that they are being blown out, you know, with their ears every hour. And it can get really crazy.
Right. Right. And again, I'll just wrap up with, like, I get the safety thing. Like, if this didn't come with additional upgrades, I would probably be against it too, you know, because, like, those trains go right through downtown. Kids walk through there. People obviously drive through there.
Yeah.
We want it to be as safe as possible. But the fact is that these do come with safety upgrades that are better than this blanket horn, you know, that is not for any reason other than they're federally required by law to do it. It doesn't matter if they see something in the track or not. They just have to do it.
Right.
So it's just this blanket thing that, frankly, like, these safety upgrades are much better than those horns. So, yeah.
Cool. You got any feedback for me?
I do. We've got a couple of new reviews here.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay. So Lori Carson McAfee, she says, it gives an unbiased, friendly interpretation of Cambie. It meaning our podcast, by the way. It.
Got it.
She's not saying it as in
the,
like,
clown.
We're its or the clown.
The evil clown from space that kills people.
It. Stephen no, King. She's not talking about that.
Got it.
Yeah.
I mean,
in the podcast.
I feel like it would be unbiased, though.
Not friendly, though. it gives an unbiased, friendly interpretation of Cambie, information that is not always found in the local paper.
Interesting.
Thank you, Lori, for that comment. I appreciate that so much. And then a second one from Mary Walsh. She says, terrific way to keep up with what is going on in Cambie. Love it. Not to mention the gift of Tyler. Great guy.
Which Tyler, though? What's her name?
Mary Walsh.
Mary, come on. Which Tyler?
I don't know.
You think it's you?
Maybe she. I don't. I'm sure it's you.
Have you met Mary Walsh?
No.
You haven't?
No.
Then which Tyler is she talking about?
I don't know.
Mary,
write
another review about us and clear this up.
Clear this up. Yeah. You can do all the. I think you can only do
or
one.
Just email me. Email me at Tyler@cambienowpod.com
and let
me know which one, even if it's the other.
Tell him it's me. Yeah. You can let him know. There are two Tylers, just so you listeners know.
Yeah.
There's two of us. So you get double the gift, right? So
double the fun.
Yeah. Okay, so for the month of March, Tyler, there's something cool going on. We got a lot of news. So
we hit
1,000 Facebook likes. Thank you guys so much for your support. That's awesome.
And we're getting very, very close to
5,000
for 30 days.
Yeah.
And we've got something really cool happening kind of behind the scenes that we're working
Stay
on.
Stay tuned for that. I'm so excited about that.
It's super cool.
We're at like 4,900 right now, like steadily. So we're getting really, really close. We were like as close as like 4,980 at one point. Then it went down because it changes, you know, it goes down every day and then goes back up. Anyway. But, we're really close. We'll hit that soon, and then we'll have a big announcement. But what's going on in March over at Cutts Forth?
So we got invited to create a coffee of the month.
We sort of invited
Cambie
ourselves, but
either way, there was an invite, and I showed up. for the party, and I brought drinks.
Yeah, and then
I created a blackberry Marionberry pie, but it's actually a blackberry cobbler.
I love drink that of name. The month. Yeah.
So that's happening all month at Thriftway at the Canby Thriftway.
So they do special drinks each month.
Right. Well, but that's changing to every week after March. So this is the last drink of the month.
Yeah.
So we got in right in time.
We did. Yeah. They realized that they had peaked with Canby Now podcast drink, and they're like, oh, okay, we can't beat it. So we'll just do a small one every month.
They've
every
got week. A lot too, where like, they're going to let people from Canby Now.
Yeah.
The Facebook page decide each
submit
week
submit ideas
for April. And then they're also doing a deal on March 14th their coffee. Yep, Pie Day. There's a lot going on. Check out the website. We should have all the information there,
right? Yeah, if you go to our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/c/CanbyNowPodcast, you can go to our brand new custom URL there and see this video Tyler did with Mackenzie Taylor, their new cafe manager over there. It's whatever. I'm not like bitter about it, but I do videos all the time. Tyler does one, and it's like our third most viewed video ever on the channel. So I'm not upset about it. I just think that's what the heck, guys. Like, watch my videos too.
I know how to strike. I wait for my moment.
I guess. It is a cool video. Tyler has a lot of trouble with the whipped cream. So definitely check that out.
Yeah.
Another thing that's going on in March, and you guys are about to hear Calvin Lesser with the city is about to tell you more about it in our next segment. But there's this Charmed with Canby thing going on. So what it is you go to either the Book Nook or Retro Revival, and you get a charm bracelet that supports the Canby Historical Society. It's $30, and they give you this coupon book to visit a bunch of other businesses throughout downtown, and you get a charm to put on the bracelet.
That's cool. That's very
Which
cool.
was my reaction, like, huh, that's cool. Like, that will be fun for, like, some people, definitely not me. It is so much more fun than I expected it to be. I did it with my daughter. We went on Saturday, so there are a few businesses that weren't open on Saturday.
Sure.
But we got, like, 12, and it was really fun.
That's really cool.
Yeah, you get to explore a lot of new things. I realized, like, there are a lot of hair salons in downtown Canby.
Oh, my goodness, And here's my question, okay? Because on Canby Now, everyone's out always asking, is there anyone in town that does hair? It's like, dude, just walk down Main Street.
Everyone does hair. There's like three or four in the book.
Yeah.
And there were a couple that I heard of, and then a couple that I was like, oh, I've never heard of that one. I was like, oh, I bet it's this. I know there's a hair salon there. That was a different one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had to like look it up. But yeah, it was really fun. The thing was, my kids were real sick that day. They were out going. So my daughter was like literally like hissing at the sun.
Normally Ellie thinks that I'm the funniest person on earth.
Yeah.
And I went upstairs for a 5-minute period yesterday to
just kind of check in.
And she, like, I just looked at her, and she was just crying at me, like, leave me alone!
They've been miserable. They did want to go out with me, so we did decide to give this a try. But, like, I put her in the van, and she's, like, literally hissing at the sun, like, in her face, like a vampire.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, well, we're committed at this point. They're going to be, like, more upset if we don't do it, right? So we have a wagon, so they don't have to walk, you know, so I'm just dragging them all around downtown, and they are really enjoying it. Like, you know, I'm not a bad dad. They were having fun. We went to Gwen's Coffee House, because that's on the Charm Trail, and they, asked for hot cocoa, which they always do, and this was probably a bad idea, but I said, oh, sure, okay, you can have some hot cocoa.
Sure.
And then we went to a couple other places, wound up at Retro Revival, which was going to be one of our last ones. I'm talking to Susie, who I know, the owner there, and Gideon, my son, he likes hot cocoa. He likes pretty much all
Everyone
foods.
Loves hot cocoa.
Well, Gideon likes it a lot.
Yeah.
So he had drunk his whole thing in like a minute, you know?
Oh, my goodness. So a sick child. In a wagon, drank hot cocoa and
just downed it.
Yeah.
I
know where this is going.
He throws up all over himself in the middle of Retro Revival.
Oh no!
And Susie was awesome. She materializes like paper towels. she like has a wet rag.
She's telling you a story about where these paper towels came from.
Probably. She's like, these are from King Louis the Fourth's reign. she materializes like a wet, warm rag, so we're cleaning up. And she was just great with it. But we decided to end the charm trail right there.
I think that's about right. My goal or my motto in life is do it till you throw up.
Right. Exactly. It's a good motto for most things. So. Yeah. But it was really fun. Definitely check it out. It goes to a great cause.
So that's what our next segment's going to be about?
Yeah, Calvin's going to explain the whole thing. But I just want to say, I'm not a guy that's like, oh yeah, charm bracelet. I love that. But it is really fun. And I wanted to be the first to try and get it. I don't know if I am, but just the collecting and the game aspect of it is fun. So
cool.
That's our outro music.
Yeah, that's it.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. We're going to kick it over to Calvin. Okay, we're out and about, and we've got Calvin Lesser, the City of Canby's Economic Development and Tourism Coordinator. Calvin, how are you?
Hey, Tyler. I am good. How are you doing?
Good. You've been pretty busy lately, I take it.
Yeah, I've been busy.
Where things are ramping up here in the spring and summer for Canby, and you've got some new things coming up. First Thursday starts this week, right? This is the first year that it's not on a Friday.
Right, yeah. So this is the first Thursday on March 7th. And basically the idea is, the city has been doing First Fridays, and for several years, and when I came on at the end of August, I was talking to people about how it was going, and after finishing out 2018, we reconvened in February with a bunch of downtown businesses, the Chamber of Commerce, and myself, and we decided to try First Thursdays as a way to get people downtown. People kind of noticed that it was already a popular night for visiting downtown, and also that a lot of people are busy with sports on Fridays and otherwise going out of town for one reason or another.
Yeah.
Right. So we're going to try Thursdays, and I'm pretty excited about it.
Cool.
Yeah,
so that roundtable you mentioned, it sounds like, and from what I understand, it was sort of this effort to bring people to the table and really look at kind of reinventing the First Friday / First Thursday Canby event from the ground up. Is that kind of the right idea? Or?
Yeah, exactly. So we got creative with it. You know, we said, let's try something new. Start from scratch. You know, no one's beholden to Fridays.
Right.
So that's the main changes. We're doing Thursdays, but also it used to run May through December, and we're actually kicking off First Thursdays in March. Mm-hmm. There's already this Charmed with Canby fundraiser for the Canby Historical Society, and that is something that Retro Revival and the Book Nook put together. So that's Susan and Megan from those wonderful downtown businesses.
Yeah, they're awesome.
Yeah, that's great fun. And you've featured them, so thank you for that.
Yeah, well, absolutely. We're excited about this Charmed with Canby thing. We'll talk about it. I've been preparing for this, to talk to you about this new promotion. I've just had that song, Semi-Charmed Life, from like the 90s, running through my head the whole week. I don't know if you guys could license that song. Might be too hard, but but yeah, so Charmed with Canby, basically the idea, like you mentioned, it's a fundraiser for the Canby Historical Society. You pay $30, you get a charm bracelet that represents a local Canby business, and then a map or a guide of some kind that kind of takes you around the city to find more charms and to discover maybe more of our local businesses or local things going on in Canby that you may not know about.
Right. And so in addition to all of that, so when you buy the bracelet, you get a coupon, a ticket book, and you can go redeem your ticket for the charms at, for example, Cutsforth. This is an apple charm. I really like the meat cleaver charm from Ebner's.
Oh, nice.
we were joking with Keith over there that he was asking for some charms for himself. And I said, are you going to make earrings out of them? Because I think that would just really good on Keith.
I think not many guys can.
Keychain.
Oh, okay. Not many guys can pull off an earring, but I think he could.
Yeah, you know, there's tough guys in there. So
well, and I mean, when your earring is a meat cleaver, like, nobody's messing with that guy.
Exactly.
So,
it's a charm bracelet, but you can probably put them anywhere. And the way it ties in with First Thursday, this week coming up on Thursday, so from 5 to 8 p.m. at Retro Revival, there's going to be a little reception. People are encouraged. So, actually, charm bracelets are already on sale, and you can get them at Retro Revival, the Book Nook, or the Canby Historical Society, the Depot Museum. But on Thursday, we're going to have a little event in Retro Revival, and people can come down, and Canby Historical Society will be there to provide some information about what they do.
Oh, cool. Yeah, for sure. I think it's such a neat idea. I got mine.
Oh, nice.
So I'm not exactly a charm guy, and I'm not going to do earrings either. But I think my daughter would have fun with it, and I wanted to support the fundraiser. But I think it's a really cool idea. Megan and Susie with Retro Revival, they kind of had this idea to do the charm bracelet because of, you know, like, people are always talking about Canby and its small town charm.
Yeah,
you know, that's exactly. Like one of our slogans practically, or like unofficially, but they're going along with that, promoting that, and obviously, you know, there are a lot of people here in Canby that believe that, and we do, you know, we love Canby's small town charm. So if you do agree with that, you know, this is a great way to show your support for that, those ideals, and for that aspect of Canby. And I think it's really neat to see downtown merchants taking the initiative like this to support their own little store, but also other folks that make downtown Canby and Canby overall special.
Absolutely, and that's, of course, my angle for getting involved is to support downtown and get people to check out some of our great downtown businesses, maybe pop in somewhere you've never been before just because it's on the charm trail. And actually, Thursday night, in addition to that reception at Retro Revival, there's going to be something going on at Gwyn's Coffee House. And that is a sort of collaboration between Vanessa Zimmerman, Academy Mortgage, and Carrie Oliver of Oliver Insurance. And they're doing a little spring financial refresher over at Gwyn's Coffee House.
Oh, cool.
I believe from 5:37, and there's going to be a raffle, and your first drink's free, and they're putting out snacks for everyone. So I do encourage any businesses downtown or just local small businesses that want to come downtown for a First Thursday to get in touch with me, and we can brainstorm some creative ideas, such as the ones that are going on this Thursday.
How can people get in touch with you, Keller?
So, LeSueurC at canbyoregon.gov. You can also go to...
You're going to have to spell it.
I know. It's, no one's going to... L-E-S, S as in Sam, U-E-U-R-M-C at canbyoregon.gov. You can also... Yeah. So, this is the City of Canby Office of Economic Development, but we also go by Canby Business. So, there's canbybusiness.com. Or stop by City Hall.
Canby Business on Facebook.
Yep, Canby Business on Facebook. Thank you very much. And we've got the event for First Thursday up on Facebook. Or stop by City Hall and ask for Calvin.
Yeah, ask for Calvin or Mr. LeSieur, whatever you prefer. Calvin, thanks so much for talking with us, and thanks for all the work that you do working with the local businesses to do new and creative things, and also for being willing and actively looking to redefine and make things like the First Friday, First Thursday better. You know, it is possible, I think, even in Canby, to sort of get in a rut and just do the same things that we've always done. So for somebody with the city to look at this, is this working? Can this be better? And to also reach out to people in the community and people, other business owners to make that happen, I think is really cool. So thanks for doing that, and we'll see you on Thursday.
All right. Yeah, I'll see you Thursday. Thanks for the kind words, Frankie.
Absolutely. Have a great week.
Okay, you too. Bye.
True story. When we first started the Canby Now podcast, we were looking to buy some stickers. Just something to help us get our name out there. We didn't have a lot of money, so we tried to do everything as cheaply as possible online. We wound up with 1,000 of these teeny tiny cheap looking stickers. Not exactly the impressive swag we were hoping for, but you know, you get what you pay for.
Yes, you do. If we had been smart, we would have gone to see Carrie at Promotional Strategies. She's a real live human and a creative genius who will deliver practical, strategic ways to promote your business on any budget. If you're looking for high quality swag that you can be proud to see your logo on, Promotional Strategies is where you want to go. Find them at 695 Southeast 1st Avenue in Canby or online at ps266swag.com.
And that's our show. Special thanks to our guest today, Marissa Yeager, and to all of our sponsors who really make it possible to do what we do. We encourage you to check them out and to help support the local small businesses that support us. If you like what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook or on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episodes.
In our next show, we'll be mixing things up a bit as we sit down with Robert Cummings, who you might know better as DJ Rob. That's right, Canby and Malala do have a nightlife, and more often than not, you'll find DJ Rob at the center of it. We'll ask him all about it in Thursday's episode.
If you have a news tip, an idea for guests we should invite on the program, or suggestions of how we can improve, please contact us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Canby Now, or on our website, CanbyNowPod.com.